Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about the choices we make. I'm your host, Steve Taylor. And tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Gaetan Battaglia are voice talents Nick Goroff, Eric Peabody, Kevin Barberi, Jeff Sturdivant, Paul J. McSorley, and Danielle Hewitt. Now, get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our Theater of the Minds. And brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Gaetan Battaglia and is performed by Nick Goroff, Eric Peabody, Kevin Barberi, Jeff Sturdivant, Paul J. McSorley, and Danielle Hewitt. In it, three kids go to a fair and meet an odd man promising something great. In exchange for giving up a word of their choice, they will gain powers of their choice. However, the more common the word, the better the powers. Now, without further ado, I present to you the Mosta.
Brad, Tom, and Mike rode their bikes to the local carnival. It was summertime, during a sweltering heat wave, and none of their mothers would let them out of the house without well-applied sunscreen and water bottles. The carnival only came by once a year, starting up a few days before Independence Day and ending a few days afterward. There was food, carnival games, prizes, rides, clowns, zoo animals, and even karaoke. The big fireworks show on the night of the 4th drew a crowd of over 1,000 fairgoers. Some lucky others were close enough to watch from their houses, getting a grand view from the comfort of their backyard patio. A backdrop of the night sky would light up with a dazzling array of multi-hued sparks. It was as though Jackson Pollock had been commissioned to throw a rainbow onto a canvas. There were so many booths set up at the carnival that it was a hard choice deciding on which games to play. For Tom, it was entertainment. For Mike, it was chances of winning. And for Brad, it was just being there with his friends. He couldn't care less if he were thrilled by the speed of a ride or how big a stuffed bear was. He just went there for the experience. And he would soon get it. Brad was munching on a candy apple, piercing its soft, sweet, caramel casing as he trailed behind Tom and Mike. They were less about carnival food and more about the games. Their mothers had given them $20 each. Thankfully, this carnival proved to be pretty cheap, so Brad still had $17 firmly in his wallet and some change rumbling around in his pocket. His buddies saved their funds for some games. By the day's end, Brad was confident that his cohorts would blow through all their money trying to win a stuffed animal. Tom and Mike came up to a booth that was brightly lit on the inside by a series of glowing orbs. They illuminated the prizes above, most of which were stuffed animals of varying sizes. Some were cartoon characters, but most were your garden variety animals. There were a series of kettle corn bags coming down the left side of the booth, while bags of cotton candy lined the right. There was already a little girl in line, attempting to win something. Tom and Mike stood in line behind her. Brad finally caught up with them, munching conservatively on his candy apple as he stood beside them in line. It was a run-of-the-mill carnival game. 3 balls for $5. Get all 3 balls into the hole in the center of the wall and win a prize. Any prize, as the booth operator would say. It did not seem so bad to most of the kids pouring their limited cash onto the table for 3 more balls at a time, but Brad knew better. The hole in the wall was likely too small to fit the balls. If customers got suspicious and complained, the booth operator would simply switch out the wall the next day and let some people win just to give off some false facade of honesty. The little girl had used up her last ball and bit of money. She walked away with her head down and on the verge of tears. Brad felt bad for her. Tom and Mike did not seem to notice, proceeding up to the counter for their turn. Mike went first because Tom wanted to see him fail. He gave the booth operator his $20 bill, to which the man handed it back 3 fives and 3 balls. Mike had a technique that he hoped would work. It involved squinting his eyes and throwing a curveball like a professional baseball player. He could definitely do the prior, but not likely the latter. Figuring he would try it anyway, Mike went for it. Cupping one of the gray balls in his hand, he slung it in what his vision told him was dead center. Gravity commanded it to fall about a foot short of the hole and bounce to the ground. Tom laughed, and Mike was annoyed that he was already out of the running for a prize. Brad showed his indifference by taking another bite of his dessert. But Mike was determined to have at least some success. So he picked up another ball and tried again. It hit too high this time, almost bouncing back at him. The ball missed, striking a stuffed giraffe. His third and final ball was gripped with extra strength. Some of it was from fortitude and some of it was out of anger. He hurled the ball straight toward the hole. It appeared as though it hit dead on, stayed in the hole for a solid second, only to fall to the floor made of dirt and hay. Mike exclaimed how it was right on, bellowing how the game was rigged. The booth operator just laughed it off, paying the losing customer no mind. Mike decided to take his loss and keep his $15. Tom patted him on the shoulder, stepping up. He placed his $5 on the wooden counter. The booth operator plunked down 3 balls, dropping the bill into his cash register. Tom geared up to win. He cared less for the prizes, but thought it would still be nice to win one. Overly confident in his throwing abilities, Tom was more casual in his approach than his friend. The ball came close but fell short of the hole and landed down with the other failures. Mike chuckled as Tom put ball number 2 in his hand. Launching it, the ball hit the wall a few inches to the right of the target. Tom quickly threw his last ball, not caring much where it went. It fell to the ground in record time. Mike burst out laughing as Tom walked off fuming. Mike urged Brad to give the game a try. Figuring he had nothing to lose, Brad stepped up. His candy apple was almost down to the seeds, so he discarded it in the garbage bin next to the booth. He handed the booth operator a $5 bill and received 3 balls. Tom and Mike watched as Brad took one of the balls in his hand. Deciding that he would not feel too out of sorts if he missed, Brad nonchalantly lobbed the ball. It went right through the hole, dashing Mike's claim of a rigged game. A small crowd around the booth clapped in unison. Brad picked up the second ball, swinging it a little to the side. It also landed inside the hole. Another round of clapping gave rise to chance for Brad to win. He picked up on some kind of energy from the cheering, tossing the ball perfectly into the hole. The crowd cheered as Tom and Mike contributed, with some barely audible remarks and sluggish clapping. Scratching his head, the booth operator looked quite surprised, but quickly and casually changed his demeanor. He asked Brad which prize he would like, reminding him that he could have any one he chose. Brad picked one. The booth operator was surprised by the choice, but did not really care as long as he looked honest to the crowd. He handed Brad the prize. Another player stepped up as Brad rejoined his friends. Laughter rang out from his two friends. They found it so funny that Brad chose that prize above any other. He smiled and informed them that it was not for him. Walking past Tom and Mike, Brad looked over and spotted the little girl who had lost. Her mother was holding her daughter's hand, trying to cheer her up. Brad walked over and gave her his prize, a fuzzy pink elephant. She hugged it, and her mother thanked Brad. The little girl thanked Brad, walking away holding her mother's hand and squeezing the stuffed animal with the other. Tom and Mike were right behind him the entire time, their laughing having ended.
Ooh, look who's got a girlfriend.
Shut up, she's not my girlfriend. Besides, she's in like third grade. I'll be going into seventh grade next month.
Yeah, I know. Us too. Don't worry, you can wait for her.
The three ventured further into the carnival, seeing what else it had to offer. As the evening was drawing nearer, the boys decided to go to one more booth before getting on their bikes and going home. After rides on the Ferris wheel, Tom and Mike decided that they were officially afraid of heights. It had become obvious from their screaming when the wheel stopped in midair. Nobody batted an eye at the three children discovering their fear of heights. When they got off, the ride operator told them all to come back any time. Tom would have called him a sadist if he knew what the word meant. They were at least rid of their acrophobia for the time being. The three came upon a large tent on the outer edge of the carnival grounds. There was a street lamp hanging close enough to illuminate the entrance, but it also failed to prevent the tent from being shrouded in darkness. No line of people was gathered to gain entry. There was not anyone else around except for a man standing beside a table. The man smiled a wicked smile, his face painted with some shadows and a dash of light. He was a short man, only a bit taller than the boys, with a black suit and black top hat and a red band fixed with the head of a rose. A glossy cane supported his figure, one that looked to belong to a man of at least 70. He addressed them.
What can I do for you, young men?
What kind of booth is this?
Why, it's a sort of spooky place.
Like a haunted house?
Well, yes, it is like a haunted house. Would you gentlemen like to try it? $2 to explore all you'd like. You'll find it's a much better deal than all those silly win-a-prize games.
The three fished $2 out of each of their pockets. They handed it to the man, who swiftly stuffed the bills into his coat pocket without counting. He drew his cane into the air, signaling for the young men to enter. They all proceeded through an opening flap in the tent. It was absolutely pitch black inside. The boys could not see the outlines of their hands in front of their faces. They began to grow scared. Just then, the tent lit up. The man from outside was seated at a table, this time adorned in a swami's outfit. He was placing cards down as though he was engaged in a game of tarot, or perhaps solitaire.
"Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome," the man exclaimed, placing one card on top of another with a lowly thwack.
"Weren't you just outside?"
"Of course I was. Now I'm here."
"Weren't you just wearing a suit?"
"I was. Now I'm wearing this. But enough questions. They will not please the master."
"Who's the master?"
"He is my benefactor. But that is neither here nor there. Silence now. You will listen. I have a deal to make with you, should you be interested."
The three stood there in the light as the man put down more cards.
"What would you say if you could be granted superpowers? Any superpowers that you wanted? What price would you pay?"
anything.
My soul.
I'd want to see what the catch was first.
Of course, young man. Of course,
the man said, dignifying Brad's response as the only reasonable one in the bunch. The man laid one last card down before rising. He walked slowly toward the boys with no cane in sight. His hands were balled up in fists behind his back. Bizarre tranquility filled his gait as he strolled across the room. His stature dictated his looking directly at his guests, not down on them. A smile took brief residence upon his face before it was gone again.
In this case, the catch would be giving something up. No, it's not just anything. And no, it's certainly not your soul.
Then what?
A word.
A word?
Yes, a word. The more common the word, the more powerful you will become. The rarer the word, the less impressive your powers may be.
So, we just lose our ability to say the word?
No, young man. If you say the word, you will lose your powers. Get the idea?
No.
It means the more common the word is, the harder it is to avoid saying it, and thus, the more likely you are to lose your powers.
This young man gets it.
That's it? Great! Give us those powers, then.
Not so fast. As with all agreements, it will require your signature on a contract.
The man produced three thick sheets of paper in an instant, purple smoke emanating from them before fading away.
Wow! That's a cool magic trick!
Dom yelled.
Yes, it's a trick.
The man lied. He placed three contracts on the table before sitting down. He snapped his fingers, making a pen appear in the same kind of purple smoke.
Which of you boys shall go first?
Oh, me! Me, 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 me!
Tom shouted, flapping his arms like it was a fish out of water.
Ha ha ha! Very well, young man. Step up and sign your life away.
Tom ran up to the table, almost knocking Mike and Brad over. The man flicked his wrist and made a small chair appear on the opposite side of the table. Tom brushed away some of the smoke, seating himself. Mike went to go stand beside him as Brad caught up. The chair felt real enough to Brad as he brushed up against the back of it, but he was sure that it was all smoke and mirrors. The man began by asking Tom what kind of powers he wanted. Tom thought of saying something like, "The power to have all powers I want," or "infinite." But he did not want to look stupid. He assumed there was a limit, but had no quarrels with testing them, or even pushing them. So, he answered the man's question by rattling off a number of superpowers. Super strength, super speed, invulnerability, flight, heat vision, ice breath, teleportation, telepathy, and telekinesis. Before he could get a second list started, the man interrupted him.
Whoa, child, slow down. There isn't a word that common that would give you all those gifts. You have a limit, you know. No more than four superpowers. The better gifts you get, and the more of them, the more common the word has to be. You may pick up to four. No more.
Okay.
Tom replied, thinking his choices through carefully.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Super speed, heat vision, teleportation, and x-ray vision.
Tom answered, selecting an impromptu fourth answer.
Excellent choices. But which word shall you give up for all these abilities?
The man asked, ready to write down Tom's response.
I?
Tom said without thinking.
I? As in eyeball? That may be not common enough.
No, I as in me.
I, the pronoun. Well, that certainly is enough to get all those superpowers. But it will be challenging going without referring to yourself as I.
The man warned, being fair.
No problem. No problem at all. It'll be figured out.
Tom promised, almost slipping up twice.
Okay, very well. Would you like to read over the contract before signing the contract?
Nah, I'm good.
Sign when ready, then.
The man directed him, handing the boy a pen. Tom flipped the contract to the very last page, signing his name at the bottom with rather careless cursive. He handed the pen back to the man. With a snap of his fingers, Tom's contract vanished. Tom and his friends looked around, confused.
When do the powers come?
They just did. Test one out, if you please. Just don't,
the man informed him. Before he could finish, some flames sprouted from the wooden table. Tom's eyes were glowing red, feeding strength to the flame.
Cool. Awesome.
Cool. Awesome.
Mike and Brad cheered, excited to see this was not a hoax. The man grabbed a water bottle that Tom had left on the table. He hastily unscrewed the cap, sending it flying. Dunking the water over the flames, he extinguished them. In no short order, and as the smoke billowed from the table, the man grew irritated.
You couldn't test out one of your other powers? Like X-ray vision?
Don't like you that much, dude.
Tom replied jokingly, already secretly training himself to not say the word I.
Let's just get on with this. Next victim.
As Tom was making his deal, Mike had been thinking of words rarer than I that would still grant him some awesome abilities. He figured he did not need four superpowers. One or two would do nicely.
So, young man, which superpowers would you like?
The man inquired, pen ready.
I was just thinking of maybe just one or two powers. I don't need four.
That's noble of you. One or two powers might still require something common, dependent upon how good of powers they are.
Well, I wanted super strength and durability.
That can definitely be arranged. Which word will you give up?
How about okay?
Okay? You do realize that that is the most common word in the world? If you're in a foreign country, you're out of luck with the one word everyone on Earth understands.
That's okay. I mean, it's all right. I don't plan on traveling anywhere around the world.
Mike replied, assuming he could not lose superpowers that he did not have.
Alrighty then. Okay, it is. Just realize that you must stop saying your chosen word the second you finish signing this contract.
That's good to know,
Mike said nervously, confirming his suspicions.
Would you like to read over the contract first?
The man asked, like he did with Tom.
No, that's cool. I'll sign.
The man handed him the pen. Mike flipped the big stack of pages to the very last one. He scrawled his signature on the dotted line, giving the contract and paper back to the man. Another snap of his finger sent the contract away. The man smiled, looking at Mike.
Is it, permissible to test my powers here?
Only if you don't break anything.
Great.
Mike caught himself mentally. Grabbing the man by his ripped clothes, Mike hoisted him into the air. The man was flailing, terrified. His body felt lighter than a kitten's. The man ordered Mike to put him down. Mike did, planting him in his chair with extreme ease.
Not on me!
Fine. I'll ask for Tom's help. Tom, use your heat vision on part of my skin.
Okay.
Tom complied, offering no resistance or debate. Tom's eyes lit up red, sending a small swirl of flames along Mike's face. He had no facial hair yet, so nothing was singed. His flesh was not burned by the fire, nor did Mike feel any pain. There was a slight warmth, but nothing more. The two boys laughed and high-fived each other as Brad stood there watching. He was happy for them, but also a little suspicious.
Nice, boys. Now, last but not least, the gentleman who's been waiting so patiently.
Brad took his turn. Tom encouraged him to think of something good, but Brad did not care. He was only interested in one power, and he wasted no time with semantics.
Flight.
Oh, so sure, so quickly. That's rare. Are you sure there's nothing else that strikes your fancy? Nothing else you want?
The man inquired, twiddling his pen.
Yes, I'm sure. Just flight.
Brad repeated. Tom smacked his forehead, thinking of how lame a choice that was.
Well, okay, whatever. That's more than doable. Which word will you give up so that you can soar through the skies?
Clandestine.
Oh, well, that's not a very common word, you know.
It was on the 6th grade vocabulary test last year, so I doubt it's very rare either. Is that common enough?
Let me think.
The man stated, doing some more twiddling with his pen. After mulling it over in his head, the man gave him an answer.
You only want one power, and it's not an offensive power or a defensive one as much as it is a self-serving one, so yes, that's acceptable. Flight it is.
Lame.
Would you like to read over the contract before signing it?
Yes, I would.
Very well then. Take your time. I have all night.
We don't.
Brad started reading from the top of page 1. He liked to be informed about something before signing for it. He carefully read each paragraph, making sure he understood what each and every clause meant. After 5 minutes, he came to something he did not like, but did not know if he should agree to or back out, or, better yet, tell his friends.
Hey, Bradley, hurry it up. We ain't got all night. It's getting dark, and my mom's gonna commit a new form of murder if we're not back by 8.
Tom yelled, the sound unnerving.
Yeah, Brad, let's go.
Mike got it, testing his indestructibility by poking his skin with his house key. With his friends pressuring him, Brad reluctantly signed the contract. He had hoped he was making the right decision. Brad was sure he'd chosen a rare enough word, not one he would ever have to use. And surely flight would not be so bad. When the man asked him if he wanted to test his superpower, Brad declined. The tent had a very high ceiling and lots of space, but still, he decided it was better to get going. As the three walked out of the tent, Mike and Tom bragged about their superpowers. After having heard enough of their put-downs, Brad unchained his bicycle and grabbed it in his arms. He flew into the night sky. One of the others called him a name. Brad began to cry. Since they had already signed their contracts, there was nothing Brad could do to save his friends now. When school had started back up a month and a half later in August, Brad was a tiny bit scared about making the transition from 6th to 7th grade. It meant no more having the same teacher for every subject. It meant using lockers. And it meant starting to go to parties and dating. But more importantly, it also meant the separation of friends. Brad had not seen Mike or Tom since the night of the carnival. They probably figured they were too good to hang out with someone as simple as Brad. It all made sense. All he could do was fly. But Brad was okay with that. As summer vacation neared its end, he had taken up some flying. He had to make sure no one was around. His only regret was not adding cloaking, or at least cloaking when flying. The weird old man might have thrown it in, too. Brad was certain that he would not be losing his power. Unlike his former friends, he actually read the contract. You can think of the word. Even say other words with the same sound as your word inside them, but not say it aloud. He thought of how Tom was okay to say I. Mike being able to say O or even oak, but not the whole word okay. Spelling and writing the word was also permitted. Brad wondered if not reading the contract made them freak out about losing their powers. He also wondered if he should tell them about that fateful clause. Between periods 1 and 2, Brad was testing out his locker combination. The school had permitted a 10-minute window for passing between classes on this day only. Students were expected to use the time to memorize their locker combinations, but more often than not, kids just used the time to goof off. Brad opted to get used to his locker, fumbling around with 2 new textbooks given to him during English class.
Ow!
Brad flinched, feeling as though something had hit him. He turned his head side to side, seeing no one. Then Penn came again, and again. Seeing that no one was looking, Brad flew up into the air. Something crashed at high speed into Brad's locker. It was Tom. He was holding his side, moaning in pain.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Brad came to the floor as soon as he could hear people coming.
What was that for?
So you couldn't hit me another 8 times. Knock it off.
Brad said, now having remembered Tom's super speed.
Or what?
You lay an egg?
Thomas, Bradley, what are you still doing here? Second period will begin in less than 2 minutes.
Yes, Mrs. Danton.
Yes, Mrs. Danton.
As she turned her back, Tom smiled at Brad.
Well, see you later, chump.
Tom waved, teleporting away. Behind him was Brad's new locker. It had been banged up pretty well from Tom's crash. The lock and part of the door were something else. It melted into a slimy, greenish, gray goop. Brad gathered that Tom must have used his heat vision at super speed to do it while going unnoticed. With his English book still in his hand and the bell about to ring, Brad hurried down the hall to his next class. It irked him that he would have to carry even more books around with him. On the way to history, Brad was thinking of how to request a new locker without making the principal suspect that he was the one who burned it. Near the end of the first week of school, Mike was playing in his backyard. He was lying on the grass, his jeans soaking up grass stains as he played a video game. The combination of fresh air and visual stimulation was peaceful for Mike, unless he was to be interrupted. He had already done his chores much more quickly than he used to, thanks to his super strength. If pieces of glass or sharp objects on the ground cut him, Mike did not care. His impenetrable skin would be unharmed and unmarked. It made him wonder if he was bulletproof, just like the heroes in the comic books.
Michael, it's time for dinner.
His mother called from the back porch.
I know, Ma. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Mike replied without looking up.
That's what you said 5 minutes ago. And 5 minutes before that, and five...
Okay, Mom. God.
Mike said furiously, almost slamming down his video game. His mother frowned. He had been getting away with that kind of sass a bit too much lately. Mike's mother chalked it off to puberty for quite a while now, but enough was enough. Any more attitude, and he would surely be grounded, thought Mike's mother as she walked inside after seeing him finally get up. Although he had his face buried in his video game without a care in the world, Mike would soon begin to have much bigger problems. Because Friday nights led into the weekend, Mike's parents allowed him to stay up until 11 instead of his usual bedtime of 9:30. Mike finished watching zombie movies that his mother hated, but his father did not care about because he's going to see the violence somehow, somewhere, someday, anyway. He brushed his teeth, rinsing with a capful of mouthwash. Mike hated how it burned his tongue, but he did it to appease his mother. Summer heat still lingered on that August night, so Mike slept without blankets. His room was entirely dark with the exception of moonlight passing through paneled windows at various times during the night. Other than that, his room was devoid of light. It was about 11:30 when Mike got into bed. 10 minutes later, he was fast asleep. Despite his fears of the dark as a small child, the darkness seemed to comfort him now. His sleep was dreamless and brief, ceasing with a slight panic. He woke up, sweaty, looking at his flashing alarm clock. It displayed 2:19 a.m. in red, luminous letters. Mike turned his head to see the moonlight pouring into his room, illuminating the bed with its glow. It also illuminated something else. Someone else.
"Hello, young man,"
the man said calmly. He was sitting at the end of the bed. His attire was the same black suit that he'd been wearing when he'd collected the entry fees from the three young boys. The cane, polished and smooth, was back at his side.
"Ah!"
Mike screamed with all his might.
"Scream all you like. No one can hear you. The master forbids it."
"What are you doing in my room?"
"Why, I'm here to help collect a debt. Your debt, to be precise, young man. It's one of the many things that I do for the master."
"Who is the master?"
"He's the one who makes all this possible. Your friends' superpowers. Your superpowers. Well, I mean, not anymore."
"Well, what are you talking about?"
"You said the word you weren't to say. Don't you remember?"
The man reminded him, smiling placidly and somehow looking younger than before.
"What? No, I..."
Mike looked down, thought, then remembered. Shock came across his face. He remembered saying the word when his mother called him in for dinner. He knew what it meant, denying it vehemently. In anger, he rushed toward the man to give him a thrashing.
"Oh, do sit down."
The man thrust his cane into Mike's stomach. He did not apply much strength, but still sent Mike sprawling back into the wall behind his bed. Mike was overwhelmed by how painful it was. It had been the first pain he had felt since the carnival.
"You'll likewise find your super strength gone too, so don't go picking up anything a young man of your size couldn't normally handle. Like a boulder or, say, your father's car."
"How do you know about all that?"
Mike demanded to know, his back still aching as he was beginning to feel creeped out.
"The master is connected to all the gifts he grants and thus those who receive them. Once you signed, there was nothing or nowhere you could hide from him."
"What does he want with me?"
"For you to uphold the contract you signed. You still haven't completed your part."
"Yeah, I did. I lost my powers, didn't I?"
"Oh, young man, you should have read the whole contract before signing it. That is why the master requires me to ask all signees if they desire to read the contract before signing it. He is really quite reasonable and demands reasonable compensation in the event that there is forfeiture of his contracts by the other party, just as he forfeits spectacular abilities upon those who uphold their part of the contract."
The smile on the man's face became bigger, much bigger. Something seemed slightly sinister about it, nearly inhuman, yet it seemed like a normal face. There was something behind the man, much bigger, taller, fiercer. It parted from its backdrop in the darkness, hitting the moonlight only briefly. The visible part of its body looked like graffiti streaks outlined in pepper. Its claws and teeth shone like diamonds, jagged and sharp. Sleek blue eyes began to turn red. Mike began to scream, but Thwas Must Do would not allow it.
"Brad! Brad!"
A voice called from down the hall. Brad saw Tom. He was not using his super speed or any other of his powers. Out of breath, he leaned over and cupped his knees. His face was deathly pale. Brad was concerned for him, but at the same time upset. Figuring he could lend a sympathetic ear, Brad chose to listen to Tom, but he had to ask him something first.
What happened? Did you lose your powers?
Brad briefly hoped. Then he remembered what he read in the contract, and suddenly hoped not.
No, it's Mike. His parents and mine were talking last night. They said he's been missing for over a week.
Calm down. I'm sure it's all right. He probably ran off somewhere to...
Or what if that weird old guy kidnapped him? What then? Maybe we're getting too good with these powers and he wanted revenge because he can't have our souls. That's what they always want in these kinds of situations, right?
Revenge for what? Tom, what would he care? I mean, you ran over here almost out of breath. Are you sure you didn't lose your powers or something? Maybe you accidentally broke the deal.
Brad questioned, hoping the latter had not come to fruition.
No, I mean, I still use them, but...
Tom stuttered until he was hit with one very big pulse-pounding realization. He screwed up.
You just said I, twice.
Brad told him, gathering that Tom had already realized it.
Damn it!
Tom called out, pounding on Brad's locker, leaving scuff marks.
Hey, didn't you do enough damage to my old locker? If I hadn't been so honest in the past, do you think I could have convinced the principal that my old locker must have had a blowtorch taken to it as some kind of prank or revenge?
Brad said, getting pissed off the more he thought about Tom melting his locker. Tom stepped back and gained his composure.
Sorry, it's just... What am I supposed to do now? I'm nothing! Nothing!
Oh, knock it off. You'll be fine. You went 12 years without having superpowers, right? You can do without him again.
Brad replied, smiling, unsavory thoughts about what would happen to Tom lingering in the back of his mind. Tom ran down the hall and smiled back, seeming much happier. Tom went on his way. He seemed to appear much slower now that he did not have super speed. Brad thought of warning Tom about the claws. He called out to Tom with the idea on his mind.
Yeah?
Tom turned his head, looking at Brad. As the warning drifted away from his mind, Brad said something else.
Just remember, you are who you are.
The next day found gray clouds looming overhead and gusty winds whirling in the streets. Tom had his head down, walking down the street from school. He was depressed about losing his superpowers. No more running around the world, no more melting stuff, no more appearing suddenly and reappearing in another place. And certainly no more seeing through women's clothing. He enjoyed that part the most. Leaves were falling on him as he walked under some trees. When they suddenly stopped falling, Tom diverted his eyes away from the ground and looked up. There was no wind, no movement in the air, nothing. Time appeared to have stood still. He ran to get out from under the row of trees, seeing that the sky was still gray. Tom looked out ahead to see a figure standing not quite motionless. In the middle of the street, someone was watching him. It was the man from the carnival, dressed in his black suit again. He stuck out his cane, walking along with it almost as though he were performing a sort of cheerful dance. Tom went out into the street to face him, officially beginning to freak out. That was when the man began to address him, smiling and looking somewhat older under the clouded daylight.
Greetings, young man. Did you enjoy your superpowers while they lasted?
What did you do?
Do not shout. I did nothing, young man. You broke the contract that you signed, so now the Master has come to collect.
Collect what?
You, of course, Tom. You.
What? How do you know my name?
You signed your name, don't you remember? I gave you the chance to read what you were about to sign, and you declined. Your friend Bradley was the wisest of you three. Maybe he'll survive this yet.
Tom's face was shaded a ghostly white. He was too shocked to believe what was happening. Acting on instinct, Tom turned around and did a sprint madly away in the opposite direction. He ran as fast as he could, expelling breaths and not caring if he got them back. His backpack fell off, dead weight, given the circumstances. Tom had covered two blocks of ground before the man appeared before him again, this time frowning.
Are you convinced now that your superpowers have abandoned you?
How did you do that?
Tom asked, now falling to the ground trying to catch his breath.
Really? You could run to China and back, and you're asking me how I have appeared before you? Please, young man, you are just too much.
Tom grew frightened. His breath was starting to stabilize, but the man did not have much more time to waste. Neither did the Mustang.
This is lovely and everything, but I must really be going. The monster doesn't like to be interrupted when he collects.
Tom's eyes bulged. His heart picked up beats faster and faster now. A large dark figure was looming in the distance. As it came close, it appeared to be the size of a tall man, then an elephant. When it got down the street, it was bigger than the trees. The man turned his head too. He smiled, seeing a familiar face.
Why, there's the monster now. That means I must be going. Ta-ta!
He walked gently away, his cane making clicks against the granite as he exited between two parked cars before disappearing completely out of sight. The monster stopped for a moment. Tom's heartbeat grew rapid. The monster took delight in this. Tom tried to get up and flee again, but some kind of force had his body pinned. The monster would not allow him to escape. It seized Tom by his right leg, dangling him up in the air like a toy. Tom screamed, covering his eyes so he could not look back. But curiosity reared its ugly head, and he did just that. His panic exploded as he descended downward. The monster proceeded to collect. Brad was walking home from school on a Friday afternoon. He was all caught up on his homework, so he would have the entire weekend to himself. Despite this, he was feeling down. He had not seen Mike in a couple of weeks, and now Tom was missing. The school put out a special announcement earlier that week about being aware of your surroundings, not trusting strangers and traveling in groups. But all the safety tips in the world and believing that missing children would turn up eventually could not dissuade Brad. He knew it was that stupid old man and his dumb monster. His master.
The monster is not dumb.
Brad turned around to see the old man from the carnival staring at him. He had a serious but stern look on his face. Not quite a grin, not quite a frown. His cane was the same as the one he had on his person when the three boys signed on to having superpowers. He was adorned in a blue suit this time around and had a matching blue fedora. Brad addressed him with contempt.
How could you hear what I was thinking?
I am linked to the Mastar, and the Mastar is linked to all who enter into contracts with him. We both know everything you do.
What did you do to my friends?
Me? Nothing. But what the Mastar does is his business. You read the contract far enough, didn't you? You should know what happened to them. In fact, I guarantee you that you do.
Why do you do this? You just lure children for your own sick ends?
I do it to fulfill my own contract from many years ago. And no, not to my ends. To the Mastar's. If the cycle of animals in nature remains constant, then the Mastar has done nothing different than any other animal.
Yeah, but why children?
Brad genuinely wondered, not understanding it.
It's not children, per se. The Mastar can do deals with people of all ages and walks of life. Children are simply the easiest to trick.
You bastard!
Calm yourself, young man. You were smart enough to read the contract and pick a word you could truly live without saying. There was nothing you could have done for the others. Your naive friend signed something unwisely before you had your chance at giving the contract a read over. And if the Mastar didn't want you to have your gift, he would have simply told me to deny your request or to choose a different word.
What does that mean?
It boils down to a numbers game. The Mastar can't let one wise person go if two others are indebted to him. Your group was the largest we've had in a long time. Years back, we used to have groups of 20 or 30 people. More adults back then signing their lives away. I do hope you understand all this.
Well, why are you here? What do you want from me? I didn't say my word, and I can still fly. I like it.
Good for you, young man. Good for you. And I don't wish to disturb it. I came to remind you to never say the word out loud and to live your life to the fullest. The Master exists to survive, but he doesn't wish a bad ending upon everyone. Think of the gifts he has given to people who can see to it that they follow rules when they strike a bargain.
Brad looked down. It was depressing, but perhaps he thought it was true. He could propel himself through the air anytime he wanted, and he assumed there were other likewise people who were smart and could do the same. But then he thought of all the deaths, which caused him to sink into a bit of a depression once more.
I must go now, young man. The Master calls me.
Brad immediately looked up. He knew what he wanted to ask, and he made sure to get it out quick. A man could just disappear.
Just one last question before you go.
Brad looked stoic.
And what is that?
The man turned his head, wondering.
If there's all this magic and superpowers and stuff, why did you need $2 from each of us when we were at the carnival?
The man looked down, thought, smiled, and then bellowed out great laughter.
My dear boy!
The man started, making eye contact with the young man. Brad did not know what else to do but listen.
A man has to eat, you know.
I hope you enjoyed The Master, as written by Gaetan Battaglia and performed by Nick Goroff, Eric Peabody, Kevin Barberi, Jeff Sturdivant, Paul J. McSorley, and Danielle Hewitt. You can hear more of these voice actors right here on our very own network. Not to mention, you can hear more of Danielle Hewitt on the Creepy Podcast, which started their audio camping event. I strongly encourage you to check it out, either on Patreon or at www.creepypod.com. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyrie has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some southern, down-home horror. And don't forget to check out The Fear from the Heartland Archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.